varied career. He's now teaching at GW Law School, but he's had many years in Justice Department and State Department. He was a professor at Hiroshima University. He was in international law firm of Jones Day, and has written several books on Japanese law. So a very good person to speak to us, and a very timely lecture today too as well, to look at the Ozawa trial since it's just started, and that's probably where you hear that's where you're starting out on. So I'm just going to turn it right over to you then.
Well, thank you very much for asking me.
Sure.
Really a pleasure. The Ozawa trial is in fact going on at this moment. It's a civil law trial, so it's not like our trial that begins on Monday and goes day to day to day to day until it's finished. It's one of these trials which it starts and then, you know, 2 weeks later you come back and have another day of testimony and come back 2 weeks later and so on. So it'll be ongoing for a little while. I'm not here to talk about whether Ozawa is or isn't guilty of the crime with which he's been charged, but rather to talk to you about the process by which he got indicted and is therefore on trial, and whether that process has any effect on the issue of democracy in Japan. And in order to understand that, we have to understand that the trial and the indictment really comes in the shadow of statistics. The statistics being, and I've taken this from the 2007 Japanese white paper on crime. For example, in the year 2006, of the 738,240 defendants who were tried in Japan, all but 82 were convicted at trial, which gives you a conviction rate of somewhere in the neighborhood of 99.9%. Now, in that same year, there were 9,343 appeals by defendants who were convicted, and of those, 20 had their convictions reversed. The prosecutor in Japan can appeal. This is a civil law system, so while they have rules against double jeopardy, that does not prevent the prosecutor from appealing. The prosecutor appealed 36 cases, of which 25 not guilty verdicts were reversed. So that shows you you're in somewhat of a difficult situation if the prosecutor decides you are guilty. It's also in the shadow of who Mr. Ozawa is. And for those who don't know who Mr. Ozawa is, he is a very important figure in Japanese politics. In the period of time since the LDP came to power shortly after the constitution was promulgated in Japan, the LDP has been out of power only two times. For a short-lived period of about 9 months when the Hosokawa government was in. There was a short period of where the Socialist Party basically was in power, but they really weren't in power. The LDP was in power behind them, and they disintegrated shortly after that in any event. But Ozawa was a prime mover in getting the LDP out of power the first time, and is a prime mover in getting the LDP out of power the second time, and still is a very important member of the now ruling party of Japan, the Democratic Party of Japan. In order to understand the subject, I think we have to talk about three things. They may seem a little disjointed, but I don't think so. The first is how the Prosecution Review Commission law operates, because Ozawa was indicted as a consequence of the Prosecution Review Commission law. Secondly, we have to understand something about Ozawa's place in Japanese politics. And thirdly, we have to understand, I think, the stringent limits that are placed on politicking in Japan by Japanese law, because those limits tend to make it difficult for individual politicians, individual candidates for office, to make their position on matters known. And it tends to suck the air out of political discussion, so that things like political scandals or fundraising scandals tend to become much more high profile than they might otherwise be, or would be here in the United States. Now, some of my friends in Japan have said to me from time to time that the Prosecution Review Commission is really the Japanese counterpart of the American grand jury. And since generally we understand the grand jury, I thought it was important to point out that the function of the grand jury in the United States is to prevent abuse by the prosecutor by limiting the authority of the prosecutor to prosecute. The prosecutor in the United States tends to have unreviewable discretion to decide to refuse to prosecute. The function of the Prosecution Review Commission is designed to prevent abuse by limiting the authority of the prosecutor to refuse to prosecute. The prosecutor has unlimited discretion to determine to prosecute. So that while both involve ordinary citizens in the process is very, very different. Now, Prosecution Review Commission was something the American occupation was very much involved with. Pre-war, prosecutors in Japan were quite powerful. People have written that they were significantly more powerful than the judges in Japan. Both judges and prosecutors were in the Ministry of Justice, and there was concern by the occupation that prosecutors might refuse to prosecute cases for political reasons, and therefore there should be some sort of check on the power of the prosecutor. And the Prosecution Review Commission, which is made up of ordinary citizens, was seen as that check. But under the system adopted after the war, the Prosecution Review Commission could review the decision of the prosecutor not to prosecute when an interested party complained, right, or itself initiated an investigation. But it could not force the prosecutor to prosecute. It could force the prosecutor to re-examine its decision not to prosecute and report back. But typically, as is true with most government officials, having once made a decision on review, they tend to find that their initial decision was obviously correct. And so this was seen over time as an ineffectual mechanism to get real review by the prosecutor. And so the law was changed in 2009, and things in Japan are not significantly different in some ways than in the United States. When I was in the government, which I was for a period of time, every time we suggested legislation, it was to reform something. And so we have a lot of reform legislation. So the Prosecution Review Commission in Japan, similarly, was reformed in 2009. And the reform kept the initial investigation similarly. If this commission, which is composed of 11 people, they serve for 6-month terms, 50% of them revolve every 3 months. The members of the commission are chosen by lot. They are ordinary citizens of Japan. If they decide that there should be that the prosecutor was wrong for not prosecuting, the matter referred back to the prosecutor to make a reevaluation, more investigation, what have you. But now, when the prosecutor comes back and explains why it's determined not to prosecute, the Prosecution Review Commission can review the matter a second time. And if upon second review, the Prosecution Review Commission retains the view that the prosecutor should have prosecuted, then there is a mandatory prosecution. And in order to do that, you take the prosecution out of the hands of the professional prosecutor and you appoint some Bengoshi, private lawyers in private practice, to become the prosecution team. Generally, the team is appointed by the court on the recommendation of the Bar Association as to who should be the prosecutors. I'm familiar with four cases to date in which this has occurred. One involved a police official, one a railroad company executive, one an investment firm, and the fourth one is Mr. Ozawa. Now, Ozawa is a former bigwig in the LDP who bolted from the LDP to form his own party. That party was instrumental in getting the Hoskawa government in power at one time. He joined together with Hatoyama and Kan more recently to form the Democratic Party of Japan, which is now the party which is in power. He is considered by many people to be the political theorist behind the 2009 successful election of the Democratic Party of Japan, which, unlike the Hosokawa period, has a majority in the lower house and does not have to, in the lower house, have a coalition government, although since 2010 they don't have authority in the upper house, which is creating some problems. And indeed, the loss of the upper house election in 2010 pitted Ozawa against Kan, who was the prime minister, because there were a lot of feelings that Kan had not followed Ozawa's advice, particularly in regard to campaigning to raise the sales tax, basically, in Japan. Yes?
Sorry, just a very quick clarificatory question. You said that there are four cases that you're aware of where the prosecution committee has firstly recommended re-examination and then forced indictment. Other cases where they have, since 2009, in which they've asked for a review of the prosecutor's initial decision, but then not recommended that indictment go forward?
Yes. Yes,
do you have any idea about how many?
I don't know how many, but I suspect they're significant number. I suspect that.
Thank you.
The loss of the election in 2010 brought about some desire to have Kan resign, which he did not do. Ozawa had been the Secretary General of the party when Hatoyama was the Prime Minister. Hatoyama stepped down as Prime Minister because of a financial scandal involving contributions to his campaign by his mother, who was one of the wealthiest women in Japan. She may in fact be the wealthiest woman in Japan. And as part of Hatoyama stepping down, Ozawa stepped down. The scandal that caused him to step down is the same scandal that has resulted in his indictment. There is bad blood between Kan and Ozawa, and Ozawa decided to take on Kan in running for the leadership of the Democratic Party of Japan, which would have made Ozawa Prime Minister if he had won. Now, Ozawa lost that election, but in losing it, he only received two votes less than Kan from members who were members of the Diet and who voted in that election, so that shows that Ozawa is still a very powerful figure in the party. Had Ozawa won the election, it would have created an interesting situation, because under Japanese law, a member of the cabinet can only be indicted if the prime minister agrees. And had Ozawa won the election, he would have been the prime minister and a member of the cabinet, which could have created an interesting constitutional crisis. Now, that may or may not have had some effect on the voting. And it is possible that Ozawa lost the election precisely because this prosecution review commission process was working its way through in Japan, which I suggest to you creates a democracy question, which gets compounded. Now, after Kan was elected, he took steps to try and reduce Ozawa's position in the party, and indeed suspended Ozawa's party membership, which meant that, you know, in September of 2011, there's been a new election in the party for a party leader. Mr. Noda has won that election and is now the prime minister. Ozawa could not run in that election because his party membership was suspended. Indeed, he couldn't vote in that election, but that doesn't mean he couldn't have a candidate. And he did have a candidate. His candidate did not win, but there is a belief that that he exhibited sufficient strength in the first stage of the process so that he could get a candidate who did win, Noda, who would be more accommodating to the Ozawa and the Ozawa forces. And in fact, when Noda was elected prime minister, he appointed a number of Ozawa loyalists to the cabinet, one of which has since resigned for reasons unrelated to this. So, the next thing, let's talk for a moment about Japan's election law. Japan's election law has been amended a number of times, but it's still basically the law that was passed in the 1920s. It was passed at that time in light of the fact that they had just passed a law calling for universal male suffrage. The government was somewhat concerned that this universal male suffrage could result in elections that the government might be unhappy about. And the original law, and it still remains basically the same law, contained a number of restrictions on campaigning, which were designed at the time to limit the opposition parties. Japan has one of the most restrictive election laws what I would call liberal democracy. There are restrictions on advertising by candidates. The number of ads you can run is restricted, the length of the ads, and what you can say in the advertisements is restricted. The campaign period is restricted. You can't campaign outside of the restricted campaign period. There are restrictions on print and TV and radio advertising. There are restrictions on individual candidates' ability to state their positions on issues in Japan. Not that you can't state them, but there are restrictions on how many times and how many advertisements you can have stating them and so on. Posters are used in Japan. If you've been to Japan during the election period, you see these posters with the picture of the candidate. The size of the poster is regulated, and how many posters you can hang up is regulated. You cannot campaign over the internet or over social media. There are restrictions on a candidate getting assistance from ordinary citizens. You can't go door-to-door handing out pamphlets. That's not allowed. Now, these restrictions don't apply with the same vigor to activities of political parties, so that political parties can do many things that individual candidates cannot do. But as a consequence of that, if you are a candidate of a party and you are running against an independent, that puts you in a somewhat better position than the independent, and as a consequence, it strengthens the existing parties and weakens independent candidates. All of these restrictions in Japanese campaign laws have been found to be constitutional by the Supreme Court on the theory that they have been enacted to level the playing field. I think about that sometimes when I hear the debates here in the United States about campaign restrictions designed to level the playing field. That has been the basis on which the Supreme Court of Japan has upheld these restrictions. They, of course, don't level the playing field when it comes to a political party-supported candidate versus an independent. The party candidate has a huge advantage. That problem was presented to the Supreme Court as well, and the Supreme Court responded, well, that's the nature of having a political party system, and therefore found that it was lawful. So individual candidate races in Japan tend to be relatively sterile affairs. I don't know if you've been to Japan during a campaign period, but if you have been, you know that candidates drive around in cars with loudspeakers blaring out the name of the candidate, taking control of all that you can hear for a period of time, and not saying very much about what the candidate stands for because they're not allowed to. And the candidate standing up waving his white glove, that's always a white glove. I don't know whether Jackson got the idea of one glove from having been. And when issues are presented in Japan, they're generally presented at the party level in the proportional representation part of the election campaign. This has led some people to believe that what's happening in Japan is that there's an evolution towards stronger and stronger leadership of parties, because you need a party candidate, really, who heads the party, who's charismatic. And Mr. Koizumi kind of reflects that. We'll see whether it has a change in the long term. But the effect of the campaign restrictions is that you have these very sterile affairs, and as a consequence, campaign finance reporting mistakes and errors become huge news items, because this is how you get to know something about the candidate. This becomes the news, and so what in the United States would be a matter that might result in a fine by the Federal Election Commission and be, you know, third page of the Washington Post one day and then disappear, becomes an ongoing matter in Japan, and tends to become a criminal matter, not a fine matter. And that's the kind of problem Ozawa finds himself in. The exact nature of the charge against Ozawa is a little fuzzy, because the first prosecution review commission said he should be prosecuted about the failure to report certain real estate transaction in a particular year. It wasn't that it wasn't reported, it was later reported, it just wasn't reported in the particular year that it probably should have been reported in. The second review commission agreed with that, but they also made some noises about where the money came from to purchase the real estate that wasn't reported. And in a sense, the trial seems to be based upon the reporting error, although the shadow of the trial is, where did he get the money for purchasing the property? Although there's been no proof that the money came to him illegally. Now, three of Ozawa's aides were in fact prosecuted by the professional prosecutors. They have gone to trial. They have all been convicted at their trial. One of his aides did what was really unthinkable, which was he secreted a tape recorder on himself when he was interviewed by prosecutors, and that tape was submitted to the judge at his criminal trial, and the judge found that the action of the prosecutors was beyond the pale, and therefore refused to accept in evidence portions of his confession, and also refused to accept in evidence portions of the notes the prosecutor had taken at the interrogation, all of which served his aid no value whatsoever, because he was convicted nonetheless, as the statistics I mentioned earlier would indicate is likely the case. At the trial, the judge apparently questioned all three of his aides who were indicted. Japan has the equivalent of the U.S. Fifth Amendment, notwithstanding defendants are regularly questioned in court and regularly answer questions in court in Japan. The judge was apparently dissatisfied with the answers they gave. Now, at the trial, there was no proof, no evidence, no finding that the money had come to the campaign illegally. The money for the piece of property had come illegally. The judge did want to know where the money came from. He was apparently dissatisfied with the answers he got about where the money came from, and concluded, therefore, that there was good reason for the aides not to properly report it, because it probably came from, well, we don't know where, and there was good reason for them to falsify the reports, and that was apparently an important aspect of his thinking in convicting them all. They have all appealed, and their appeal is now pending. It will take a while. Appeals in Japan tend to take a while, but the conviction obviously is going to have an effect on the Ozawa trial, which has begun. It started by the prosecuting Bengoshi introducing into evidence the statements made by the aide who had tape recorded his interview. The aide has since testified that in fact he never did tell Ozawa anything about these statements, notwithstanding what he said to the prosecutors, notwithstanding that this statement was, of course, thrown out at the AIDS trial. Ozawa has denied the charges. Now, whether or not he's guilty is to be determined. We'll have to see. But it's important to recognize that, unlike the AIDS, the professional prosecutors in Japan refused to indict Ozawa on two occasions, right? Actually on three, because there was another prosecution review commission in a different part of Tokyo that considered the question of indicting Ozawa. They also thought he should have been indicted. The prosecutor decided not to go ahead. They kind of left the matter to the other prosecution review commission. The prosecution review commissions are all over the country. There are over 100 of them. I forget exactly how many. And so Tokyo, being a big city, has several prosecution review commissions. And the one that indicted him twice is the one that got the indictment. The indictment had the effects I've mentioned earlier, but the democracy issue that I would ask you to think about, and which concerns me, is you have a system in which an individual citizen can complain that somebody should have been indicted, and then 11 citizens determine whether the person should have been indicted. And then the professional prosecutors, who presumably are trained and experienced, and who know the statistics, so they know that if they indict, you're going to be convicted. If they decide not to indict, should 11 ordinary citizens who may or may not have some axe to grind be in a position of determining that a public official should be indicted? For example, the complaint that starts the wheels in motion for the prosecution, right? Is it a vehicle for retribution, for example, by a loser against a winner? Can it be used for that purpose? I'm not suggesting that that's why Ozawa was indicted. I have no idea. I'm not suggesting that at all. But having seen what's happened, it would seem to me that professional politicians and political parties would see that there is here a mechanism. Well, a mechanism for the loser to deal with the winner. I'm not suggesting that's what happened, but I am suggesting that now that we have some experience, people may learn from this for the future. And because of the flexibility of the system, it's possible that the complaint could take place in a place where the official is vulnerable. In Ozawa's case, we know that there were at least two different prosecution review commissions in two different parts of Tokyo. Is one part a ward that was more Democratic Party of Japan oriented? Was another a ward that was more Liberal Democratic Party oriented? Do people have this kind of choice to go to a place where the politician is weakest? Now, it's very important to recognize that because of the sterile nature of individual campaigns, these events like the Prosecution Review Commission reporting somebody should be indicted tend to drown out other political noise, because there isn't very much of that other political noise going on. We saw this happen, for example, in the run-up to the September election in the Democratic Party of Japan. Was it Maehara, been the foreign minister, was reported to have received a campaign contribution from a foreigner, which is against the law in Japan. Now, foreigner has to be defined. The foreigner, it turns out, was a special permanent resident of Japan, which means someone of Korean ancestry in Japan who does not have Japanese citizenship, although their parents or grandparents may have had Japanese citizenship, which they lost as a consequence of the peace treaty between South Korea and Japan. They have no place else to go, so they're special permanent residents of Japan, many of whom have taken Japanese names to kind of better fit in to the society, and that apparently was the case with this person. So it's kind of difficult to know that this person's a foreigner. He was forced to step down as foreign minister, and he was the front runner, people thought, to run against Khan in the September election, and he turned out not to have made a very good showing in that election. So that shows you the force of these kinds of reporting errors can have in Japan. And the basic freedom issue, it seems to me, is should 11 lay people, right, be able to force a government to proceed in a criminal case against an individual, just as a general matter? I mean, should the government have some ability to step in and say, wait, no, there's not enough here to put this person through the ringer of a criminal case, such as we do in the grand jury here in the United States, where we even say to the professional, no, there's not enough to put this person through the ringer. But secondly, should they be allowed to do this where the politics of a nation may be at stake? If in fact Khan won the inter-party election, intra-party election against Ozawa because of the fact there was this Prosecution Review Commission determination, the first one, which was outstanding, right, that he should not, that he should be prosecuted, then this vote by 11 people in Tokyo had an enormous effect on Japanese politics. And if you believe, as I do, that the reason the LDP was in power for so long was not because the Japanese public is in love with the LDP, but because the Japanese public saw no alternative. I mean, for many years it was the socialists who nobody believed they could govern, and when in fact they joined in a coalition with the LDP so that there was a socialist prime minister, it was proven that they couldn't govern, and they basically disintegrated after that. Now, if that's the reason, Ozawa probably can govern. He's probably someone who can govern, so that this has had an enormous effect. Also, you know, when you have criminal cases, the temper runs high. The blood is hot, huh? And the demand for vengeance to find somebody who's responsible, someone who's guilty, is quite high. The Supreme Court of Japan just recently reversed a conviction of some bankers having to do with financial scandal, right? We think financial problem there too. And in the opinion, they noted that there was enormous pressure on the prosecutors to prosecute in order to give the public a feeling of reassurance. So, you know, members of a prosecution review commission would seem to me to be under greater pressure if they thought there were public pressures than would professional prosecutors. And when that can have an effect on political figures such as Ozawa, that seems to me to create a democracy issue, and one that should be seriously considered. That issue did not exist prior to the 2009 reform, because prior to 2009, the prosecutors could say, look, we looked at it again, there just wasn't enough evidence, which is what they did in Ozawa's case, and they got overruled. So that was what I wanted to present to you today. I'm happy to take questions. Yes.
Very interesting presentation. As a foreigner who lived in Japan, I guess I did read a few admonitions, basically saying you don't want to get unprosecuted in Japan, even as a visiting foreigner, your chances of being convicted are probably 100%. But then there's some kind of cultural background to that too. For instance, the fact that the police are so intent when they do think they have the right suspect of trying to get that person to confess, because they would much rather have the person get back into the good graces of society by coming clean and so forth and so on. And of course that probably leads to some known, there are rumored abuses by the police, some pressure confession, but often the people are guilty. So anyway, I mean, now, so I'm trying to make this really short because I do have a question. So, let's say that in fact the prosecutors have this really high rate of success and conviction. So let's say that they sort of choose their cases of where they want to prosecute, as you suggested, by their own estimation of how good their case is, to keep that up. I mean, they won't prosecute unless they're pretty sure they're going to be able to get the conviction. However, so it seems to me that the really statistic you might want to look at, or maybe you already have it, is this. You said that in these cases you're talking about, you aren't using the professional prosecutors, you're using private lawyers who have chosen to carry out the prosecution. Now the question would be, of all of those cases, or maybe not too many, what's the success rate in convictions? Is it just as high, or are they only got a 50% batting average?
Yeah. No, I think they've had a high batting average, but they're only three cases that have been decided so far. So that's now, you are correct that prosecutors in Japan view it as their function to rehabilitate the accused, and there's a very, very high rate of cases that police do not refer to prosecutors under their discretionary authority, which they get from the prosecutors, because they don't want to put you through the system. And again, the reason they don't want to put you through the system is because they know that the last place to get rehabilitation is in the prison, right? We apparently in the United States haven't figured that out yet with our recidivism rate. And prosecutors know the same thing. So in Japan, they have a thing called suspension of prosecution, in which the prosecutor basically has decided you're guilty and that the evidence is there, but they don't want to prosecute you. The confession idea is not just confession idea goes back to Tokugawa times. Under Tokugawa law, you couldn't prosecute without a confession, right? So you had a two-stage process. At the first stage, you had the investigation, which resulted in the confession, right? And at the second stage, you had the trial, in which the person acknowledged that they had confessed. Now, if they refused to acknowledge that they had confessed, if they walked away from the confession, right, you sent it back to the first stage again, and they were put through a little more torture until they learned that you're supposed to do what you're supposed to do, and they went to the second stage and confessed. So confession was a staple of the Tokugawa regime. Of course, torture has been abolished since the Constitution, but it remains a staple of the Japanese process. So one of the reasons you have a 99.9% conviction rate is because, unlike the United States, where you can have plea bargains and so on, in Japan, if you decide to prosecute, you have to prosecute. You can't have a conviction without a trial, right? And in 97%, 98% of cases, the defendant has confessed. So that kind of makes it easy. And there's enormous pressure on the prosecutors to get a confession in the cases. And that does lead to some abuses. We know there have been a number of cases recently of false confessions in Japan. It's a problem. Yes?
Fascinating. Thank you. One point, one question. On your kind of last question about or your point about the kind of incentives that this new reform might set in place and how they might lead to perverse outcomes. There's another way in which I think that the likelihood of that occurring increases, and that is the one strategy used by the prosecutor's office in prosecutions is to systematically leak information from the investigation to the media, which tend to report that information during the investigative stage in order to prejudice the outcome against the person being investigated. So you actually have and that was clearly the case in this stage before the prosecutors chose not to indict and were forced to indict later. So, you know, front page blanket coverage of this issue across all the broadsheets for months. And then people who probably are some consumers of that information were placed in charge of making a decision about whether an indictment should be carried out or not.
In fact, if I can just interrupt it, at the first day of the trial, Ozawa gave a statement in which he blamed the professional prosecutors for his being in the position that he was in, which is really what you're saying. And he took the same line.
And then my question...
Then what would be the motivation of the prosecutors to leak that information if they're in a position to begin with as they should?
Well, in Ozawa's case, there could be two modifications. The first is the general motivation of you leak it out beforehand because then if you're going to go to trial, the conviction becomes more acceptable to the public.
Sure, but the prosecutor's position in this case was that he shouldn't be prosecuted.
Right, but until you've made that decision, you may want to soften up the public. The other is that one of the things that has distinguished Ozawa from many of the political figures in Japan is his dislike of the bureaucracy, which some have suggested resulted from the paralysis in Japan during the first Gulf War, when the question was raised as to what military support could be given to the American effort, and the bureaucrats decided that under their interpretation of the Constitution you couldn't give any. Ozawa is reported to have been furious at this, and he has been one of the motivating forces in the Democratic Party of Japan in its program, which so far has been somewhat unsuccessful, to reduce the power of the bureaucracy and increase the power of the elected officials. Now, the prosecutor service in Japan, unlike the prosecutor service in the United States, is a bureaucracy. They come right out of, the law school, pass the bar exam, go to the training institute, elect to be prosecutors, and then serve as career prosecutors. So there might be some reason there to try and get even. I'm sorry.
No, and my question was about the citizens group, which once the prosecutors decided not to indict, then put in a petition to indict, and then to review the decision, and then finally to force the indictment to move ahead despite those two decisions from the prosecutor's office, because it's a very important missing component of the story, which is not yet come to light, who that organization is. There are the broadsheets have not reported on it, but there is information out there that organization has is a relatively shady organization. It was not an individual but a citizens group, and particularly the organization was implacably opposed to Ozawa's position that non-Japanese citizens should be given votes in local elections, which was one of the important issues in the first months of the DPJ's cabinet. And I was wondering if, as you've followed this issue, about whether you have come across any information which has identified the background of that citizens group, because their name is known, but the press has not reported on it. I've asked friends who in the press who initially said they didn't know, and then said they did know, but they weren't reporting about it.
I don't know either.
I thought you might have come across that information.
I don't know either, but it highlights the problem. It highlights the problem. Yes.
Thank you very much for the very legalistic approach, and I'd be thrilled to go on with this, but my question is going to be a little side of the issue. But before that, a quick comment I want to make. The Koreans who were living in Japan, they lost nationality, Japanese nationality, not as a result of the peace treaty, but because of the imperial decree that was issued in 1947, one day before the present constitution came into power, because once the new constitution is there, there can be no imperial decree. So they were deprived of Japanese nationality and automatically declared as foreigners the day before the constitution came into power. So that's the abrupt change of their nationality. So before that, they were Japanese, they had Japanese names, and there's no, the only difference now they have now is that they have different nationality. They live exactly as a Japanese. Sorry for the long explanation, but my question is concerns why Japan keeps on changing its prime minister on an annual basis. The evident answer is that we have had a divided diet ever since Abe, where the majority does not control the upper house, so it makes any leader to hold up difficult to hold up power. But at the same time, there's a phenomenon that Mr. Ozawa has been behind, or maybe in the front of the scene. For each and every administration, Abe and Fukuda, there was a debate of grand coalition which did not come through, and two prime ministers resigned. Aso did not jump to that idea, but he was defeated in the election, again masterminded by Mr. Ozawa. And Hatoyama, whatever reason he chose to favor his resignation, but shortly before he decided to resign, there was a behind-the-door showdown with Mr. Ozawa. And Khan was much more evident, because Mr. Ozawa threatened to say yes to this vote of no confidence. So Mr. Ozawa was also there when prime ministers kept on changing, and I'm not implying anything myself. I would like to ask your opinion.
Yeah, well, there are some who suggested that that Ozawa might be able to get governments elected, but he can't keep them in place. The Hosokawa government failed after, 9 months? And he was a major player there as well. My suggestion is that as prime minister, Ozawa could probably govern. I think you'd have less of that backroom stuff there if he were actually up front, which is what he attempted to do in running against Khan. Probably decided to, for whatever reason. Now, by the way, in terms of the loss of citizenship, one of the other problems that these formerly Japanese citizens have is the problem of translation for the Constitution. You know, the Constitution was originally written in English because it was written by, you know, Cades and his group. And when they used in the Constitution the term persons, they likely were thinking of the 14th Amendment here in the United States, in which a person was any person who happened to be a person. When that got translated into Japanese for the purposes of the Constitution, the Japanese term that was used had a connotation of a Japanese person, and as a consequence, what it means is a citizen, so that these special permanent residents, i.e. Korean nationality, you know, Korean ethnicity, don't fall under that provision of the Constitution, because they're persons, but not persons as that term has been interpreted into Japanese.
Interesting. I'm very excited to see the first person that agrees with me. When I was a college student, I was saying exactly the same thing, that the Japanese Constitution has two terms referring to its nationals. One is kokumin wa, a national, and the other is nankitomo, any individual. And there is a difference between an article that talks about kokumin, a national, and a nankito, person. But I was the only guy arguing about this, and nobody listened to me.
There are many people who have suggested in writings that this was one of the translation problems that the Americans around the table missed. You know, there was that late night session in which they translated it from English to Japanese. The Americans caught some other things, like they caught the translation that would have translated the position of the emperor into a much more significant position than was intended, and they got that word right, but this one they didn't get.
Actually, just to comment briefly on that, you have the same thing with the term for the Japanese language, commonly called our language, but the meaning being the language that we nationals share among ourselves. So that a Korean, a Japanese, living in Japan, the perfect Japanese who writes a novel in Japanese is not writing according to that terminology in our language, because he isn't one of us.
Now, this language problem is an interesting problem in terms of law, my field in general, because when you had your Meiji Restoration, there was the need to develop a Western legal system so that you could get the unequal treaties put aside and Japan could get its sovereignty back. And the first attempt at doing that, apparently they sent someone to France to translate the Code Napoleon into Japanese, and then they would adopt that as Japanese law. And the immediate problem he was confronted with was how to translate legal rights into Japanese, because there were no characters that stood for that, because the concept had not been a concept that was known. And so that was an immediate problem in terms of how you kind of meld legal systems. Yes.
Well, I'd like to get back to the political question that Minister Vila raised, and I wasn't quite sure what the implication of your question was about whether Mr. Ozawa was willfully behind the fall of governments. But my own take is that that's not the case, and there might have been in some cases, but definitely Ozawa-san was a factor. And in some cases, you know, he probably tried to buttress the government, and if the Grand Coalition had worked under Fukuda, then the Fukuda government might have continued. So, and you know, I'm not sure that Mr. Ozawa willfully brought down the Hosokawa government, but although he did take actions that then led the socialists to defect. So there's definitely an Ozawa factor in all of these cases, and it's a very important one. And so my question to you, I mean, I know you didn't want to give us a verdict on this, but given your legal background and your knowledge of the merits of the case, do you think Mr. Ozawa will be convicted or will not be convicted? And given what the outcome is, what implications do you see this is having for Japanese politics?
Yeah, I think Ozawa has a good chance of not being convicted, and the reason I think that is because the professional prosecutors decided not to prosecute him, and he's such a high-profile figure. The judge trying the case, I don't know the judge trying the case, but the judge trying the case has got to know what the statistics are. And he's got to know that the professional prosecutors knew they could convict him if they indicted him, but took a pass on it. And he's also got to know that Ozawa's had his problems with the bureaucracy, so that there's every reason why the professional prosecutors might have wanted to proceed against him. And I think that may play a role in the judge's determination of the case eventually. For an acquittal. So I think he has a chance of getting acquitted because of that.
What's the legal argument that the judge would make for acquittal?
Well, the problem is a problem of proof. I mean, the basic proof that they have against Ozawa, apparently, is the confession of his aide. His aide has now testified that, in fact, he did not tell Ozawa. In order to be guilty of the crime, Ozawa has to have known and condoned the false report, okay? And his aide has now testified that, in fact, he did not show the report to Ozawa, contrary to what he told the prosecutor. And he's testified that he told the prosecutor that because, you know, the prosecutor brought such enormous pressure on him, he had to do something to compromise his position so he could get out of there. So the judge has an out. He has an out. He can look and say, well, as the other judge said, this confession has all sorts of problems associated with it, etc. And the man appeared and testified. He seemed, and so he's got the out.
But and then if he is acquitted,
he'll be. There's an interesting question which I don't know the answer to, and that is whether the Bengoshi are required to appeal. I mean, after all, the prosecution can appeal. The prosecution can appeal, and I suspect they're not required to appeal. But the question then is whether they would decide they want to appeal. So the appeal just keeps the process going. So he's still in a difficult position.
Yeah. Well, then the implications for Japanese politics are kind of horrendous.
Yes.
Because then you have this issue kind of casting a cloud, and you know, and one of the things is that a lot of the able people in the Democratic Party are those that are part of the Ozawa
children.
And one of the problems that the DPJ government has is, given the cloud over Ozawa, even if Mr. Noda wanted to, he would have a hard time picking up some of the younger people in the Ozawa group to be leaders in the government. I mean, of course, he's appointed a couple of loyalists, but I would not say those are the best and the brightest of the Ozawa.
Especially since one is forced to resign already.
But that really poses a problem for the DPJ in terms of its capability for governing.
Yeah, and if you agree with me that the reason the LDP has been able to hold on so long is because their opposition has always been believed unable to govern, and Hatoyama demonstrated that he wasn't able to govern, and now you have this continuing problem.
Any other questions? Well, I want to thank you very much. It was a very fascinating presentation. I think we all learned a lot, so thank you very much.